Be sure to follow Send Me to Sleep on your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode, and a good night's rest. Welcome to Send Me to Sleep, the place to find a good night's rest. My name's Andrew. I'm here to calm your mind and help you relax into a peaceful night's sleep. I'm going to do that by reading you a story. Tonight, I'll be reading The Extraordinary Adventures of Arsène Lupin, The Seven of Hearts, Part 1, by Maurice LeBlanc. In the last chapter, we learnt all about the origins of Arsène Lupin. This story will be one of unusual burglary, mysterious deaths, and sudden disappearance. First, let's make sure we're ready to fall asleep. It's common to have thoughts racing through your mind at bedtime, and it can make it hard to settle down. Tonight, while you're listening to this podcast, I want you to try and think about the thoughts that you're having. Sum up what they're about in one word. Then tell yourself, it's just a thought, and I don't need to be having it right now. All I need to do is concentrate on having a good night's rest. And so, let your eyes fall heavy, and your breath soften, as we settle in for a peaceful night's sleep. Chapter 6, The Seven of Hearts. I am frequently asked this question. How did you make the acquaintance of Arsène Lupin? My connection with Arsène Lupin was well known. The details that I gathered concerning that mysterious man, the irrefutable facts that I presented, the new evidence that I produce, the interpretation that I place on certain facts of which the public has only seen the exterior manifestations without being able to discover the secret reasons or the invisible mechanism, all establish, if not an intimacy, at least amicable relations and regular confidences. But how did I make his acquaintance? Why was I selected to be his historiographer? Why I, and not someone else? The answer is simple. Chance alone presided over my choice. My merit was not considered. It was chance that put me in his way. It was by chance that I was participant in one of his strangest and most mysterious adventures, and by chance that I was an actor in a drama of which he was the marvellous stage director, an obscure and intricate drama, bristling with such thrilling events that I feel a certain embarrassment in undertaking to describe it. The first act takes place during that memorable night of the 22nd of June, of which so much has already been said, and, for my part, I attribute the anomalous conduct of which I was guilty on that occasion to the unusual frame of mind in which I found myself on my return home. I had dined with some friends at the Cascade restaurant, and, the entire evening, whilst we smoked and the orchestra played melancholy waltzes, we talked only of crimes and thefts, and dark and frightful intrigues. That is always a poor overture to a night's sleep. The St. Martins went away in an automobile. Jean Daspry, that delightful, heedless Daspry, who, 6 months later, was killed in such a tragic matter on the frontier of Morocco. Jean Daspry and I returned on foot through the dark, warm night. when we arrived in front of the little house in which I had lived for a year at Newley, on the Boulevard Malliot, he said to me, "Are you afraid?" What an idea! But this house is so isolated. No neighbours. Vacant lots. Really, I am not a coward. And yet... Well, you are very cheering, I must say. Oh, I say that as I would say anything else. The St. Martins have impressed me with their stories of brigands and thieves. We shook hands and said good night. I took out my key and opened the door. "Well, that is good," I murmured. "Antoine has forgotten to light a candle." Then I recalled the fact that Antoine was away, and I had given him a short leave of absence. Forthwith, I was disagreeably oppressed by the darkness and silence of the night. I ascended the stairs on tiptoe and reached my room as quickly as possible. Then, contrary to my usual habit, I turned the key and pushed the bolt. The light of my candle restored my courage. Yet I was careful to take my revolver from its case, a large, powerful weapon, and place it beside my bed. That precaution completely reassured me. I laid down and, as usual, took a book from my night table to read myself to sleep. Then I received a great surprise. Instead of the paper knife which I had marked my place on the proceeding, I found an envelope closed with 5 seals of red wax. I seized it eagerly. It was addressed to me and marked "Urgent." A letter. A letter addressed to me. Who could have put it in that place? Nervously, I tore open the envelope and read, "From the moment you open this letter, whatever happens, whatever you may hear, do not move, do not utter one cry, otherwise you are doomed." I am not a coward, and, quite as well as another, I can face real danger or smile at the visionary perils of imagination. But let me repeat, I was in an anomalous condition of mind, with my nerves set on edge by the events of the evening. Besides, was there not, in my present situation, something startling and mysterious, calculated to disturb the most courageous spirit? My feverish fingers clutched the sheet of paper, and I read and reread those threatening words. "Do not move. Do not utter one cry. Otherwise you are doomed." Nonsense, I thought. It is a joke, the work of some cheerful idiot. I was about to laugh, a good loud laugh. Who prevented me? What haunting fear compressed my throat? At least, I would blow out the candle. No, I could not do it. "Do not move, or you are doomed," were the words he had written. These auto-suggestions are frequently more imperious than the most positive realities. But why should I struggle against them? I had simply to close my eyes. I did so. At that moment, I heard a slight noise, followed by crackling sounds, proceeding from a large room used by me as a library. A small room or antechamber was situated between the library and the bedchamber. The approach of an actual danger greatly excited me, and I felt a desire to get up, seize my revolver, and rush into the library. I did not rise. I saw one of the curtains of the left window move. There was no doubt about it. The curtain had moved. it was still moving. And I saw, oh, I saw quite distinctly, in the narrow space between the curtains and the window, a human form, a bulky mass that prevented the curtains from hanging straight. And it is equally certain that the man saw me through the large mesh of the curtain. Then I understood the situation. His mission was to guard me while the others carried away their booty. Should I rise and seize my revolver? Impossible. He was there. At the least movement, at the least cry, I was doomed. Then came a terrific noise that shook the house. This was followed by lighter sounds, two or three together, like those of a hammer that rebounded. At least, that was the impression formed in my confused brain. These were mingled with other sounds, thus creating a veritable uproar, which proved that the intruders were not only bold, but felt themselves secure from interruption. They were right. I did not move. Was it cowardice? No, rather weakness. A total inability to move any portion of my body, combined with discretion. For why should I struggle? Behind that man, there were 10 others who would come to his assistance. Should I risk my life to save a few tapestries and bibelots? Throughout the night, my torture endured. Insufferable torture. Terrible anguish. The noises had stopped, but I was in constant fear of their renewal. And the man who was guarding me, weapon in hand. My fearful eyes remained cast in his direction, and my heart beat, and a profuse perspiration oozed from every pore of my body. Suddenly, I experienced an immense relief, a milk wagon, whose sound was familiar to me, passed along the boulevard, and, at the same time, I had an impression that the light of a new day was trying to steal through the closed window blinds. At last, daylight penetrated the room. Other vehicles passed along the boulevard, and all the phantoms of the night vanished. Then I put one arm out of the bed, slowly and cautiously. My eyes were fixed upon the curtain, locating the exact spot at which I must fire. I made an exact calculation of the movements I must make. Then, quickly, I seized my revolver and fired. I leaped from my bed with a cry of deliverance and rushed to the window. The bullet had passed through the curtain and the window glass, but it had not touched the man, for the very good reason that there was none there. Nobody. Thus, during the entire night, I had been hypnotized by a fold of the curtain. And,